Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
You've got mail.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren, and on the East Coast we have Mr. Dave Martino.
Hey Al, how you doing?
Yeah, good, good. See, no north.
Awesome. No north, yeah, we just deleted it.
We just deleted it. That's one
gone.
Too many words to say.
It's way too many syllables.
On a hot day, we don't say
that.
It's too much work. Yeah, too much work. Well, on the west here, we are in, we're 91 degrees right now.
Wow, melting.
Yeah, it's going to be over 100 for the next 5 days. Yeah, I'll tell you. I'm staying inside.
I don't blame you.
You know, and... whoever said it was cold in Canada.
Canada. Right.
Crazy people that say that, you know. Just don't tell them. So now, speaking of hot, we've got Australian author today. So all the way from down under or up inside out or wherever, depending on what side you were looking at. We've got Liz Butcher on the line. How you doing, Liz?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. Actually, you know. It's warm, it's sunny, hot, you know. How's it down in Australia? Are you going into winter? You must be in winter now, right?
We are, yes. So it's where I live doesn't really get particularly cold, unfortunately. So it's about, I don't know, 16 degrees here at the moment. I'm in the T-shirt, so yeah, clearly not freezing.
No. But that's a good temperature, you know. It's like mild. It's in that's mid-60s for the American listeners who don't know Celsius. So that's actually a good temperature. So,
yeah.
Well, so here we go. Now you've written quite a few books. Now you've got a new one that just come out called Never Never. Now it looks like you're pretty much into kind of a psychological horror writer, or is that, how do you classify yourself?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good way to put it. More of, psychological horror rather than sort of slasher gore horror. I like messing with people's minds a lot more, so definitely psychological.
Yeah. Well, no, that's good. So, I mean, did you draw influences from people like Alfred Hitchcock, or is that kind of what people get if they buy one of your books?
A little bit. Also sort of, I guess, along the lines of sort of Stephen King-ish, but I like lots of twists and turns. So, I don't really know who else I'd be likened to, but, if you like having to guess or not know what's going on, then you'd like my books.
Yeah. Well, but I guess you kind of said it right. You're not really into the slash and gore. It isn't about you don't. We wouldn't really get into the descriptions of the murder and the bloodletting, so to speak. It would be a little bit more psychological, more ominous. More of a mystery.
Yeah. You know? That's right.
Where do you get your influence from then? Like for you personally, if you didn't, where does that come from? Like, did you grow up with Mummy Dearest or something? Like what?
No, I don't know. I've always been fascinated by sort of the dark and creepy ever since I was a little kid, which probably sounds really quite strange, but I've always been fascinated by it. And even when I was in primary school, I'd go to the library and get books out on, you know, hauntings and paranormal phenomena and whatnot and scare myself silly. So I don't know where it comes from. I guess it's just innate. And so when I started writing, I didn't sort of set out to say I'm going to be a horror writer or I'm going to be a specific genre. It's just I started writing and that's kind of where I just fell into it. So I guess it was just natural for me to write in that vein.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you were a kid, you weren't like tying up animals or anything like that, were you?
No.
Okay.
No. Just didn't cross the
okay,
line.
Okay. I just, you know, maybe, you know, you know, something going on there, you know, it's like we can call and get you some help here. If that's.
Thank you.
Ben, well, you know, we always like to be polite here. Always help out.
Yes, no, it's very considerate.
Yeah. But you know, so now you've done some books here now. So what got you? Okay, so you really like the horror. You're a kid. You're sort of into paranormal and sort of strange things, and that's great. But what actually gave you the, I don't know, the courage to actually write something and to let people read it or put it out? Was there some sort of thing that happened, or where did that come from?
Yeah, it's kind of strange. So the first book I wrote was Fate's Fury. But in saying that, that was sort of years in the works. And it was literally just this idea that popped into my head and these sort of characters started forming and these scenes started developing. And I was sort of ummed and ahed over it for about a month before I sort of thought, well, maybe I should put pen to paper and just maybe see what happens. It just, yeah, it was really odd how it kind of came about. And so, yeah, then I started just writing it and it was very disorganized and very sporadic, but and while I was working on that I started writing short stories and they started getting published and that built up my confidence, I guess, to think that maybe I could actually publish a novel and just sort of went from there. But it was really strange. It wasn't like I was, when I grew up, I want to be a writer. It just, yeah, the story sort of came first and then pursuing writing kind of followed from there.
No, I understand that.
You know, you mentioned pen to paper. I was just wondering, are you more of an analog writer or a digital writer? I saw on your website you had some pictures of actually some pages where some notebooks or what have you. And I just wondered if you composed with pen and paper or if you've composed completely in the digital medium using a computer.
Yeah, so with all my short stories and my first novel, Fate's Fury, was all done by hand initially, which I guess I always thought was a bit double handling because then you've got to go back and sort of type it all up. But I've sort of trained myself to be a bit more digital, at least with the writing side of things. But all my plotting and planning and everything like that is all analog. So every book, every project has its own sort of notebook and folder and pictures and whatnot. So I'm very, I guess, old fashioned sort of like that, but I just find that creatively, if everything's too digital, I find it stifling and I can't, I guess, work through it. I need to have, literally the pen on the paper for it to all, I don't know, sort of come out. Maybe it's just because I'm old, I don't know, but that's just how I work. And I thought it was really odd, but then I did James Patterson's masterclass and learned that he still does everything by hand, so that made me feel a little bit better about
it. A lot of people do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it, for some people, too, I'd imagine it, like you were saying, it's not so... there's a difference of typing it into a computer rather than writing it on a paper, I guess. It comes out different, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And I don't know whether other people find it, but sometimes just staring at a screen, it's just, I don't know, it's almost like staring at a wall sometimes. It's just not creative enough. So, but putting your pen in your hands, I don't know, there's something magical about that, I think. And it almost becomes an extension of your mind, and it's almost like automatic writing sometimes. It's just not even necessarily paying attention. It just, the words just come onto the paper and there you go.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Or is that just me?
No. I mean, I say, you know, it depends what's on your screen too, right? I mean, but so, now you said pictures too. So do you draw pictures, or do you have pictures of your... of the people you've murdered, or what?
Well, that would be sort of giving myself away a little bit.
Oh, that's true. No. Don't want to do that. Let's not do that.
No, let's not do that. Images of different things. So sometimes if I've got a specific idea of a character look, I'll have images of people to kind of put that together, or images of places that are going to be settings, if it's going to be a heavily visual type story, all sorts of things. Creepy pictures to set the mood, just anything that I just draw inspiration from, and it all gets kind of put in the one spot, so it's all together.
Hmm. Where did those ideas come from? Like, do you find that you're out shopping one day and you see something and it kind of comes to you, or you see a person, or you see something that happened, or where do these ideas come to you, and do you think you know why?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of that, just sort of walking around doing everyday stuff, and an idea will pop into my head, which my husband finds quite creepy, because like we'll be out shopping and I'll see something and then like, oh, but imagine if that had a knife and then this happened. And he's like, you were just creepy. Just don't even tell me. So I guess because I do write dark stuff, that the ideas turn dark very quickly when I get inspired in public. But other than that, it's sort of just dreams I have, or, mostly just ideas that just randomly pop into my head. Not sure what that says about me. But
oh, I see.
It's always the ideas.
But you're walking through the shopping store and then you see someone and you start following them around, stalking them, and seeing, you know, where do they drive and who are they with, and do they carry a gun or a knife, or like what are they doing, you know? Yeah.
That's the good thing about being a writer, though. It's not called stalking, it's called research.
That's right. So,
yeah.
great. Yeah, this is Australia must be fun. Wow. So these ideas come up, but how do you know what you're going to choose? I mean, of course you don't know, but you get these ideas. Do you run with every idea you get, or is there some that you kind of go, no, this is, and stop and move on to the next one? Like, what is it that you decide that this is one that's going to work?
So it's usually whatever's the most persistent at the time. So I've literally got a box full of index cards and every index card's a different story idea. Like, I will never be able to write a story for all of them. But it's just basically whichever one just keeps niggling at me, if that makes sense. Like, you know, I just get an idea and it just won't sort of go away. It's kind of like annoying, nagging you all the time to kind of pay attention to it. And that's literally just how I decide which one is going to come up next. And then once I sort of decide to settle on that, it all just sort of forms, and then I just go in from there.
When you write, I hear voices. I mean, that's what I talk about all the time.
Yeah.
Do you hear the characters' voices in your head? Some people don't have an inner monologue, and I just find it, you know, I find that fascinating. But I was just wondering, do you have an inner monologue? Is it more that you're seeing images or symbols that you're transcribing? I hear stuff, and I transcribe, and I see some visuals, but I just wonder how that works for you.
Yeah, definitely both. I definitely have the inner monologue that I hear, which, yeah, again, people find a bit disturbing. And I get visuals as well. But the inner monologue thing has always fascinated me because I will be doing something like, I don't know, even reading a book or knitting or something, and I'll literally get this conversation sort of pop into my head, almost like I've just picked up a phone and start listening into a conversation midway, and I'm like, oh, okay, and then that's got to be included in the story. It's really odd how it kind of happens, and it's, I don't know, I find it fascinating, but other people find it a bit creepy.
Now, is this the first husband you've had, or have you had quite a few?
just the first one, one and only.
You know, going through the shopping mall and you're hearing voices and you're following people around, picturing them with knives.
Yeah.
It just kind of sounds a little different. Now, it says you have got two cats, are they still alive? Or?
Yeah, I did have three, and one passed away recently, so now I've just got the two. But she passed away because she was old, not because I didn't to her, just to make that clear.
It's just like, wow. She's not scared to talk about it either. I tell you. Pretty open and free. Okay, so we get the little story and the idea. So the characters, now where do you get them from?
Again, they just, it's more like meeting someone. I know that sounds strange, but usually the characters. Okay, let's face it. I'm just strange all over. Okay, I get it. But, I mean, yeah, I don't really, it's not, a lot of people sort of sit there with a character chart and fill out, information about what the characters are going to be, but I've always sort of found my characters sort of tell me what they're going to be like. And then as I kind of get to know them better, I guess on paper fill out their characteristics a little more, but it's really hard to explain. I don't sort of sit there and kind of go, all right, well, what's this character going to be like? And, you know, how am I going to make them look? It's more just, well, this is who I've met and this is what they're like. But it sounds so strange when you say it like that.
I was going to say, you're doing quite well. I mean, you could run for president in the U.S. the way it's going, right?
Well, yeah, that's not fair. Yeah. I'm here as well, don't worry.
I was going to say, you need to be in politics. You're hearing voices and getting to know people while you're knitting on the, things are good. Things are good. They don't let you get it done, do they? Right. So.
No, so there's a silver lining there.
I can see why, you know, it's just like makes sense. Meanwhile,
a lot of writers in Australia.
Yeah, meanwhile, Dave, he's got like a whole 12 of them and he's like hearing voices in the basement. And,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
That's going to keep me locked up in the basement of the House of Mystery.
Yeah, yeah, he's on a chain.
Good call.
Yeah, wow. I guess it's, you know, he is the person you don't want to be alone with in a room.
Yes.
No. Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like it.
So, but I just wonder now, though, your characters, do you use people you know, people you've met, or, you know, when you're out in the supermarket, you're in the coffee shop, are you kind of staring down people, listening to what they're saying and doing, and do you pick that up and kind of use that?
Maybe a little bit, probably not consciously, I don't think. I've never written a character based off anyone that I know. But I think part of being a writer is you do observe people's behaviour and things like that, so that when you do come to write a character, you might draw on that sort of, I guess, data collection that you've done, but not specifically after an actual person that I know, not at all. I know some people do, and some people base characters off themselves even, but like I said, my characters have sort of come to me in that weird way, so I guess I don't really need to really base them off anyone else.
I've seen that you write, short fiction as well as novels. Do you feel that you're a natural short story writer or more of a natural novelist, or do you have a preference to which one you're doing? Or do you like them both equally?
Yeah, I think I prefer novel writing now. Like, the short stories were a great way to, develop some writing skills when I was sort of working through my first novel, and just to I guess, build up some confidence and get some work out there. Mm. I mean, there's pros and cons to both. Yeah. And when I switched to novel writing as opposed to any more short stories, there were things that I kind of had to work a little bit harder at, because things like, I guess, plot development and characters and things like that, you touch on a lot lighter, and it's only a 10,000 word short story. Yeah. So when I moved to novels, I really had to spend a lot more time in the research phase, which I love anyway because I'm a total nerd, but there's a lot more padding out involved before you start a novel as opposed to a short story, where you can, you know, just have the bare bones and still have a really good story.
Are you any of your characters?
No. I like, at least not that I'm aware of anyway. I'm not consciously. They might have an odd bit of me here or there, but I don't. Yeah.
Well, I just seen if you're maybe the killer or something. We're going to have to cover all bases here, because this is getting a little dangerous here.
Yeah, but would you really expect me to tell you? If that was
well, you're across the, you're oh, quite a ways away, so by the time the police got there, you could be, you know, it's not a big deal, right? No, I'm just wondering, that, but you must put yourself into each character, something.
Don't know. I don't think so. I'm just trying to think of all my main characters, but no, I don't really think that.
Like the emotions or the little, maybe little gestures, or perhaps how someone would act or react, or is it that you take characters that you like? So the characters you do make, then, are they people you'd like or you don't like, or like kind of like?
Well, a little bit of both, I guess. I mean, like anybody, they've got things you like about them and things that you don't particularly like about them. But I guess all my characters sort of really have been sort of independent of me, at least to my knowledge. Like I said, I mean, someone might read a character of mine and think there's a similarity or a connection there, but it's not something that I've actively sort of put into them. Off the top of my head, I can't think of any examples where a character is like myself. But again, maybe as a reader, they might call me out and say that's rubbish because this is exactly like you, and I just didn't realize. So I just, yeah, don't know.
Well, you were just talking about research. What does the research process look like for you when you're doing a novel?
Yeah, so I usually sort of start off with, I guess, trying to gather some imagery that matches what I'm sort of seeing in my mind. And I'll write down key points of sort of the idea. And then if there's, I guess, things that need specific research on, whether it be like a location or a time period or something sciencey or whatever, I'll go and research that and make notes on that, and then do further research. And I have to really rein myself in not to get sort of caught up in the rabbit hole of the internet, because I am such a nerdy person, and I find things really interesting and get caught up really easily and end up on a massive tangent that's got nothing to do with what I'm actually going to be writing about. But then I sort of gather all that information, and then once I've got that, I'll sort of work on character research, sort of what their background is, where they're from, and yeah, just lots and lots of research. I like things to be, even though I write obviously fiction and dark fiction at that, I like points to be factual where possible, if that makes sense. So that it's not all just like, so it's realistic, but in an unrealistic story.
I couldn't imagine what your web browser looks like, but what is the premise of your new book, Never Never? So what's kind of the base of the story?
Yeah, so it's actually a Peter Pan retelling set in the here and now. If you don't recall, the Peter Pan character, Wendy Darling, she and her brothers were taken to Neverland by Peter Pan in the original when she was a young girl. And in my version, it's 25 years later. She's an adult, she's a detective, and she's still sort of dealing with the trauma of the abduction that she went through when she was 15 at the hands of this entity that she can only recall as Pan. Then she's got a death in the family, all these skeletons start coming out of the closet, and a local girl vanishes from her bedroom in the middle of the night, much like she recalls happening to herself. So she demands to be put on the case. That is essentially a trap this Pan's trying to lure her back. So, yeah, that's the basic premise of Never Never.
Hmm. So is that a personal story here, or is that...
No.
No, I noticed it. You said you were really into the paranormal and kind of strange things like that. Does that influence how you write as well?
Oh, absolutely. Everything that I write ends up dark. Like I said, it was never a conscious decision to say I'm going to be a horror writer. It's just how I naturally work my stories. And even like Fate's Fury, I wouldn't say is specifically a horror novel. It's got horror elements to it, but there's a lot of sort of mythology and action in it. So just the horror, the dark parts still find their way in. I can't help it. I could never write a romance story, for example, because someone would have to get killed or be haunted or something traumatic. So yeah, I just can't do light and happy stories, unfortunately.
When you write very dark fiction, do you feel at the end that you need to decompress in some way? And is there a way that you decompress, or do you find that you don't need to and you can just move on to something else that's just as dark?
Yeah, I don't really need sort of the decompression time. I just move on to the next. It's not going to translate as scary to the reader, because when you write it, because you know what's sort of coming, at least myself, I'm more conscious of the fact of making sure that it is going to be scary and take the reader by surprise, because when you know what's happening, it sort of takes the fear out of it as the writer. I find
she just moves on to the next body.
Yes, that's it.
The next victim, you know.
Yeah, don't even wait for it to get cold. Just
yeah, she's out looking for the next story, I'll tell you. Wow, you have quite the life. So Never Never, someone takes it home, reads it, and besides the story, you know, the abduction and everything that goes on, do you have an underlying theme there, or some sort of something that you want people to pick out of that book?
Yeah, most of my books do have that sort of underlying theme or sort of message. And with Never Never, it's sort of more about perception and manifestation. Sort of, can you trust what your eyes are seeing and what your brain is telling you, and what is real and what's not? And one person's perception of reality is different to somebody else's, and I guess all that sort of mind-bending thought process, and you know what you put out there manifest, even the horrible things. So that's sort of the underlying thought and theme to Never Never. Whether everybody sort of gets that when they read it, I'm not too sure, but that's where that sort of all stems from.
I'd probably get it if I could read, but... You know, but that's a problem. So where do you see yourself going then with this? Do you really like the kind of horror, science fiction, fantasy sort of area, or are you going to go somewhere different?
Yeah, no, I think I'm pretty set here. Most of my books do have a crossover genre, so I don't feel that I'm too limited in writing sort of the horror, dark fantasy, dark fiction.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door.
Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My second book, Maroon Manor, would be the only one so far I'd consider to be straight up horror. Resident Fate's Fury was a mishmash, and Never Never is as well. So, I mean, that's horror, but it's also got the detective crime side of things. And I just find when you're writing dark fiction, you can cross over these other genres quite easily. So, like my next one that I'm working on is going to be sort of a lot heavier in the fantasy side of things, but still very dark with the elements of horror. So yeah, I can't really see myself writing anything else. So I just hope people keep enjoying reading horror, or else I'm in trouble.
So it's kind of like your love story.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. That's a nice way to put it.
I was wondering, do you have any hobbies or activities that inform your work that you draw from to help you create story?
Wouldn't necessarily say hobbies exactly. I do have a degree in psychology, which I guess I do draw on quite a lot when working my stories. And I guess that's a combination of my love of the mind and my love of scary things. So yeah, but aside from hobbies, I mean, I like to knit. I'm a grandma, really. But I find that sort of something that's one of those times where I get those kinds of conversations popping into my head. So it's almost still kind of like working in
a
way.
So grandma's knitting on the couch and she's getting ideas about who she's going to stab with the knitting needle.
Exactly. Hearing those voices chatting away.
Yeah, working away. You're sure you only had one husband? Okay. Yeah, so.
As far as he knows.
Going to check under the floor.
Yeah, under the floorboard. It's one of those. So the fantasy part, where does the fantasy come in? So what is that? Maybe explain that to some of the listeners.
I guess it sort of changes from book to book. So it was Never Never sort of more of an urban fantasy, because we do have, you know, this entity that's clearly not human, which is Pan, and a lot of sort of what's happening around him you couldn't exactly call realism. So that's where sort of the fantasy element for Never Never comes in, whereas in my upcoming project it's a lot heavier with fantasy, so it's going to be world creating and all that type of thing, different realm. It just kind of changes from book to book, the fantasy elements. It's not, I guess, the focus of my story so far. It will be in the next one. But, I mean, all writing really is an element of fantasy if you look at it that way.
Yeah, it really is. So with the last crazy year or two that we've had, has that affected your writing Does it get in the way?
No, it actually, the timing, that sounds awful, but it kind of fell into place for me. So I had been working in a corporate job for about 7.5 years, and I'd been slowly reducing hours to start my own business as a ghostwriter. And so just before COVID hit, I was already in discussions with my manager to go on a 6-month career break, which essentially means you have 6 months unpaid leave to pursue whatever it is that you want to pursue. And if it falls through, you've still got a job at the end of it to come back to. So that was already sort of lined up. So basically when COVID hit and all the offices shut down and we had to work from home, I worked from home, I think not even quite 2 weeks before my leave kicked in. So it didn't really affect me work-wise, because that was sort of already my plan to do that, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I've been writing full time for just over a year now. So I guess I was very fortunate.
That was good of the job too. I mean, because they give me a 6 month to leave. I was going to go be a dancer, and it didn't work. So I came back to work, because it just wasn't, you know. No, but I mean, with the COVID, and all of it, I just mean the dark things when you're in a stressful event. So in real life, outside of your home, so it's something really happening. You know, it's like there's all this stuff going on. Does that influence, or does that seep into your writing, so to speak? Do you think your writing gets darker? I've talked to some writers that say they totally get into fantasy and they get totally out of the real world. So do you find there is an effect that way on you?
Yes and no. I find that if I'm particularly emotional about something, that does definitely seep into the writing, but I usually try and find a way to use that. So if I feel that that's going to be an issue, I'll work on something that requires, you know, a heightened level of emotion or anxiety or whatever, and just try and feed that into the writing, almost kind of like a therapy or outlet. I don't know. It's doesn't happen all the time, which is a good thing. But yeah, I do try and, I guess, yeah, use that silver lining, I suppose.
Well, you mentioned corporate jobs. Do you find that having worked in a corporate doing corporate work itself and the deadlines and such, do you find that makes you a more efficient writer?
No. I'd like to say that it does, but it doesn't. And that's something that I've really, really struggled with the past year of writing full time, is suddenly not having the knowledge that there's someone constantly observing what you're doing and, you know, somebody watching over your shoulder leads to procrastination, which has always been my Achilles heel anyway, but it's much worse when you're your own boss and there's no one, you know, to, I guess, hold you accountable except yourself. So it's definitely a massive, massive issue, and I have to work really, really hard to try and keep that at bay as best I can, because I do find that if I'm working on something that I'm not feeling super connected to, I'll clean the house or go put some washing on or, you know, or do these things, and my husband will come home and he's like, oh, rough day with the writing, was it? I'm like, what makes you say that? Whereas if it's a good day with writing, he'll come home and there's literally like just the house, it's like a bomb's hit it and nothing's been done. And then he knows I've had a productive writing day. So yeah, it's just one of those things.
Oh yeah. No, I agree with that too. But I sort of look to break up the monotony as well. I like to go back and forth. To the wash or to the vacuum or something. I like to kind of take breaks. But
yeah, I probably should take breaks more than I do when I'm not procrastinating. But I find that when I'm having a really good run, I don't want to jinx it. And so I'll just sit at my desk until that sort of has all sort of come out. which isn't necessarily good because then you've got a sore back and a headache and like whatever. But I guess because I know my penchant for procrastination, I kind of don't want to put myself in a position where I've ruined a good writing streak because I've taken a break and then got distracted and then procrastinated for 2 hours and then it's gone.
Hmm. So what do you do for fun? Like what's your outside entertainment when you get away from writing?
Yes, I love getting out in nature. We love going to the beach or sort of walking through the bush or just getting out in some fresh air, especially when you spend 90% of your life at your desk. It's nice to go out and explore a little bit. And my daughter loves going on, she calls them little adventures. So we love to do that when we can. And otherwise just the usual reading and writing I do for fun. I love writing. So even when I'm not working on something, I'll be doing something writing related somehow. Just because I'm a nerd and I like
yeah.
it. It makes me happy.
So you're saying, talking about ghostwriting and stuff, I guess ghostwriting really makes you a better writer in a way, doesn't it? Because you're kind of doing a lot of things for other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And it definitely makes me, well, I feel it's made me a better writer because I'm, I guess, exposed to things that I wouldn't naturally write for myself. So I'm exposed to different genres or nonfiction and different types of writing projects. So it really does expand your horizons as far as the writing's concerned. And it can be challenging as well because of the fact you're writing things that I guess don't feel quite as natural to you to write.
What if you get something real?
I love the challenge.
What if you get some really, really bad thing to write and you really can't stand it? And you think this is the worst. Have you ever had to do some ghostwriting for something you're really not into? You don't have to tell us, but if you do, that's fine.
Bad person if I say yes.
We won't tell anyone.
Yeah, we won't tell anybody. So just
nobody.
Thanks.
Just say the name and we'll.
Oh no, I have had one or two projects that I didn't love that I did have to really work at, and that's where the procrastination would really sort of kick in because I wasn't super keen on it. But like I said, you work for yourself, you've got to, you know, put your head down, your butt up and just get on with it like any job some days. And I'm just lucky that, you know, 90% of the time I love my job now, but you know, there's always going to be some things that you don't enjoy as much as others. I still have to get done though. Mm-hmm. And wonderfully, I'm not someone to half-ass it. So even if I'm not enjoying it, I'll still give it 150%.
Have you ever, so who do you think is just a terrible writer? What's the worst book you ever read? Come on, give us the names.
You won't tell anyone.
I can't.
Come on.
The name definitely came to mind as soon as you said
well, it. Well, okay, so without saying the name, but is it someone that's fairly popular? So yeah. Just how does that make you? Yeah, so just print the name and show it to me. No, but how does that make you feel then as a writer when, let's say, someone that you think, you know, it's just without being into the person, but just you look at the work and you go, oh, God, this is awful. But yet it sells really well. What do you think of that? Like, what do you think the secret to that is?
Oh, it's bloody annoying. If I knew the secret, I'd be totally taking it on board. But, oh, I don't know. It is frustrating when you read something. This is such rubbish and everyone loves it and everyone's talking about it. But then, you know, usually find other authors feel the same way and they're kind of like, yeah, that was so badly written. But I don't know. Just sometimes they just hit that little pocket that
yeah the right
leads into everyone
the right cover yes, or the right, right, moment, right subject yeah. or the right marketer or something that just
yeah and it just goes mental and everyone loves it and then made into movies or whatever and,
yeah I had that with the McNamara book that was they did HBO made a series about the Golden State Killer and she was writing about it and I couldn't get through the book. It was awful. She's passed on now. She's dead, so she can't hear me. Well, not live anyway. She won't be. No, but I just didn't like the style, and I didn't like the way that she talked about her own life. But it was a huge hit, and everyone's saying, "What a good book!" and all this. I just, it just sort of, it's sort of bizarre how that is.
Yeah, I mean, I always try and sort of just think, you know, each to their own, and I don't like to, you know, belittle or discredit any other writers, because I'm more about supporting people. Yeah. But it is hard when you see the hype, you're like, well, it's not something that I would normally read, but it's, you know, everyone's raving about it, I'll have a read. And then you sort of start reading it and you think, oh, geez. And it's probably worse as a writer, because you are picking up on all the, crappy writing. You probably notice it more than just a normal reader would. So they can probably enjoy it without seeing all the things that are red flags for you as a writer. So maybe that's what the difference is. I'm not too sure, but yeah, sometimes I'll just, it hurts.
Well, yeah, because you're reading and you kind of go through and you kind of pick up things and you go, ooh, I wouldn't do that. Or yeah, because you're looking at the technical part of it just as well as the story, whereas a lot of people out there wouldn't do that necessarily because they're not doing it. And it's a difference between a person that writes and a person that doesn't write. How you go about it and you're reading a story and stuff like that. I guess that kind of makes it hard for you to enjoy someone else's story sometimes too, or no?
I think it does. I've definitely become, I guess, a lot pickier as a reader since, becoming a writer as well. And I've become a lot more impatient, I think, when it comes to books. Whereas if I started reading something that I didn't, you know, really love, you know, 5-10 years ago, I just keep going anyway. Whereas now I can't, if it doesn't catch me sort of in the first chapter, I'll just be like, no, next, and start the next one. Probably also because I'm a lot more time poor when it comes to reading these days. That if I'm going to read, I want to make sure that I'm loving it. But a lot more impatient as a reader, I feel. Mm.
Can you read books? So if you're writing right now, some. I can't read, I can't write, and I've been published 20 times. So I'm one of those guys. You know, when I said it's for someone you can't believe that they've sold a book, I thought you would have said me, right? But that was kind of you not to mention me, because I would have said me. So, but I mean, when you're reading a book and you're in the middle of writing something, let's say you're writing Never Never. So you're sitting there at home and you're doing this stuff. During the process of writing a horror book or a fantasy book, can you be reading someone else's horror and fantasy as well, or do you have to keep yourself clear?
Yeah, I make a point of not reading anything like what I'm writing, because I've got this fear that there'll be like a subconscious crossover or something. I just don't want to do that. So if I'm writing one particular thing, I'll read something completely different. And even with my reading, I tend to alternate between fiction and nonfiction anyway. So that kind of helps. But, I definitely make sure if I'm reading fiction that it's something far removed from what I'm writing on, just to kind of keep my mind separate on the two things.
In the same vein, can you listen to music? Do you watch TV in the background? Or do you need complete silence to work?
No, I usually either have something on Netflix playing, or most commonly I've got a podcast that I listen to that I'm nearly catching up on. It's a true crime podcast called Morbid that I love. I love true crime, so I've usually got that on in my ears while I'm working away. Or it might be like a crime documentary or something. It can't be anything that's, entertaining as far as like a TV show or anything like that, because I'll get too distracted and just start watching it. But if it's like a documentary or something like that, something factual, that I can listen to that while I'm writing, and that I find very conducive to my process. Or else just straight up music. I love listening to soundtracks for horror movies like Sinister and all those really good Insidious, like all those kind of movies. I've got their movie scores on a Spotify playlist, and just that's it. So you pretty much always have headphones on, because I don't want to freak my daughter out. So They just pretty much on my head all the time.
So, yeah, so I can see this. She's knitting. She's got insidious music going on, and she's talking to her voices.
Yeah, that's totally my jam. You've just nailed it all in one.
And I just can't believe you don't write romance.
Yeah. Missing my calling.
Yeah. Well, when do you ever look back at your older books that you've written and kind of look them over and read them again and kind of go, well, I wonder, it would, you know, when look back and kind of go, I would have done that different, or I should have done that different, or anything like, do you ever go back like that or no?
I did a little bit with my first book, which was a collection of short stories. So a lot of my early work and I do with that. I just think, oh God, like, why did I publish that?
Yeah.
not that it's terrible, but I've grown so much as a writer since then. But that's the point as well. I feel like if you're not growing as a writer, then you're probably not doing a very good job. So I kind of make a point of once the story is done and published, that's it. I don't go back over it. I don't reread it. It's done, and I go on to the next one, because inevitably you're going to nitpick the crap out of it, you know, a year or more later, and see everything that you would have improved. But you know, you take that on with the next book and make that one even better than the last.
Yeah. Oh, I agree totally. Yeah. Otherwise, you'll always be wanting to redo it. I mean, I just put my old books in the bathroom so people can use them for, you know. I don't know. I cringe when I look back. But, you know, I've done well in Australia. I've had some really good sellers in Australia. I do true crime, so people love that. You guys like to kill.
Yeah,
over
true
there.
Crime's awesome.
Yeah.
We're fascinated by people who like to kill.
Yeah, for sure. Well,
we've had some pretty epic ones in our time. Yeah. But.
Yeah, I'll say. Yeah, it's been a few good ones. Now, so where do people come and find you if they want to send you a note and say how much they like your book or how much they dislike it?
Yeah, I'm open to either. They can find me on my website, which is www.lizbutcher.com.au, or they can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok under @LunaLoveLiz. And I've also got a Facebook author page under Liz Butcher.
Wow. We'll have that on our website as well. People can find you if they're listening, and they can go one click and find Liz and send her a note, you know, give her. Do you like interacting with people, or is that like fans or non-fans or reviews? How is that okay for you, like all of that? Social media?
No, I love it. It's great. I love connecting with people, especially in this day and age with, you know, the COVID world. I think it's probably more important than ever to connect with people. So,
No, it's a good thing. What's next for you? Have you got another one in the works?
Yeah, I've got two. So I've got a novel that I'm working on that's sort of a dark fantasy called Sunrise. And then I'm also working on my first series, which is going to be a paranormal psychological thriller. So working on both at the moment.
Well, in a series, it's kind of a different thing, eh? Because you've got to keep keep track of your characters, right, and how you develop them.
Yeah, it's definitely been a new challenge, which, again, I love a new challenge. But it is different in the whole planning because, you've got the overall arc that's going to sort of carry over all the books, and then sort of the individual stories for each one. And, it is a lot more planning and involved, but it's just another excuse for me to get my nerd hat on and do all the research. But, it's going to be tricky, I think, but, again, looking forward to it.
Have you outlined the whole thing, like the series of however many books you're doing, and then you're going to put it in, or are you just sort of, how do you go about that?
Yeah, I've sort of roughly planned sort of how many books I feel it's going to need, and then sort of key points over each one, and I've planned out the entire first one. And then I'm sort of in two minds what to do next. I've heard some series writers say they plot out every single book before they start writing the first one, but that's a better way to do it. I'm just going to try. I'm just going to find how it's going to work
That's got to be a real interesting process, because as you go through each book and each storyline, you've got to remember what the characters have done in previous books.
Yeah, and I guess my biggest concern at the moment is if I go ahead and write the first one because it's all plotted out and then move on to sort of the next one, and then I get sort of a new idea or a new plot twist that comes through, and then I think, oh, that would have really been great to have some foreshadowing of that in the first one. Do you know what I mean? And then, but you can't go back if you've already done and released the first one. So yeah, I'm still in two minds as to how that process is going to look at the moment. But watch this space, because it will happen. Mm.
Well, you could always make the first one a dream.
If all else fails, it was
yeah. They woke up in their bed and they go, "Wow, that was a weird dream." And then you can bring in to this. You see, that's great. See, you can get an extra novel.
You figured it out.
I'm going to help you do this. This is going to be great.
I'll be sure to credit you.
Have you ever thought of collaborating? Do you ever work with other writers?
Well, I kind of do with the ghostwriting, to be honest. Many of those are collaborations. I just don't get, I guess, my name on the book for it, but they are, a lot of them are very much collaborations. So I'd totally be open to doing collaboration with another author where we're both on, you know, the front page or whatever. But yeah, I do that all the time now, daily with my work. So I enjoy it. It's great to bounce ideas off with another person, or help bring their ideas out into the open with a bit of clarity. And it's sometimes it can be really challenging if you're not both seeing the same thing. But for the most part, I find it really great because you just get that quite often another perspective that you wouldn't consider. And it more often than not makes it for a better story.
Yeah, I was going to say, because if you're not in the same, if you're not seeing the same thing, the same image of what a character is or a story is going to go, it could be kind of strained, or it could be a little difficult. But you know, but you know, you can just tell them, look, I'm the writer.
I'm usually a little bit more diplomatic than that. I'm usually like, well, it's your project, we'll do what you want, but this is where my thought process is, and I try and explain to them exactly how I'm seeing it. And then
they still say no, then you put your foot down and say, look, I know how to write, you don't.
No, I'm like, it's your project, we'll do what you want.
We'll do what
that would be the difference. I think working with another writer is that you would be both equally on the same page, as opposed to being a hired ghostwriter where sometimes your hands are tied and you can put your best ideas forward, and sometimes you've just got to bite your tongue and
well, that doesn't work for me. I walk in the room and everyone bows. And I snap my fingers and they run. No.
Well, see, most of my clients live in different countries, so I don't have that benefit of walking to a room and everyone is bowing down. It's all done online, unfortunately.
But they can do it on Zoom. Same thing. Yeah.
Well, yeah, maybe I should start demanding that as part of my
right. You know, put in the contract, have your people talk to my people. Yeah. And yeah.
I'll sign your NDA if you film yourself bowing down. Thank you.
Yeah, don't call us. We will call you.
Yeah. Man.
Well, it's been a great interview, and we really appreciate it. And we've learned so much. We've learned that Australian writer Liz Butcher actually likes to sit in her chair and knit, listen to heavy metal music, and talk to voices. And out of that comes these great books. And the newest book is what we've sort of focused on, or all sorts of writing, but our newest book is called Never Never. And our guest, Liz Butcher, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Liz.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
The mission has been completed.
The end!
By George, he's got it! It is the end!
I'll tell you.
If you're lying to me, I'll be back.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.